All right. Good morning, everybody. Good morning, all you magnificent melonheads of the world, and happy Friday, everybody. Happy Jobs Day. Today's September 5th, 2025. And the big news this morning, as you may have guessed, is the non-farm payrolls report. The jobs number, or should I say the lack of a jobs number. By the way, sorry, we got started on the stream a little bit later than normal this morning. Jobs days are always like that because it's a very important data point. It hits minutes before we go live. Got a lot of maths and things to do on jobs day. So let's talk about what it was, guys. 22,000 jobs added. That was the number. That's versus expectations of 75,000 jobs added. Big whiff right there. We talked yesterday about how some of the lesser labor market data points that came out earlier this week, like ADP, big miss on ADP. The JOLTS report, big miss on JOLTS report. Initial and continuing claims didn't look that good either. And we suspected we were going to have a weak non-farm payrolls report. And of course, this is all following last month's non-farm payrolls debacle that resulted in the head of the BLS being fired because of massive downward revisions to prior month's numbers. And then we came out with a number today that's really just, it's terrible, guys. 22,000 jobs added. Now, you might be saying, well, hey, at least we added jobs. But wait, there's more. Those downward revisions, they'll get you every time. June's non-farm payrolls was revised lower by 27,000. And you might be saying to yourself, hey, Jack, there wasn't even 27,000 jobs added in June. And you would be correct, which means the June non-farm payrolls number has now dipped down into negative territory to 13,000 jobs lost for the month of June. I forget what they were initially reported as, but it was initially reported like over 100,000 in June. And you notice how we just kind of like slowly downward revised our way into a recession there. That's interesting. Silver lining here, the July jobs number was actually revised higher by a much smaller 6,000 jobs higher. That's now 79,000 added for the month of July. But look, let's take those downward revisions in aggregate. We got a negative 21,000 worth of downward revisions to our 22,000 jobs added. So what's our net gain? 1,000 jobs added to the economy for the month of August. Guys, that sucks. All right, we've been talking about the weak labor market for years on this channel. We've been talking about how the non-farm payrolls numbers just do not match the economic reality on the ground. We've heard anecdote after anecdote from people talking about how hard it is to find the jobs. And then all of a sudden we would get these like hundreds of thousands of jobs added. And everybody was like, where the hell are these jobs? What are they even talking about? To be honest with you, The non-farm payrolls are finally starting to match the reality that we've all been seeing on the ground. They're not gaslighting the hell out of us anymore. And look, the numbers get worse the more you keep reading. We're going to talk about like the full-time and the part-time jobs and the multiple job holders. There's really not a lot of encouraging data in there. We had some sectors did well. Healthcare added 31,000 jobs. That's actually fewer healthcare jobs added than we've added in prior months. And it's just a sign of the aging population, not a sign of prosperity. Social assistance added 16,000 jobs. All right. So we need more welfare workers and, you know, like family court officers. What a great sign for the economy that is. Federal government lost 15,000 jobs. I'm going to go ahead and put that in the win column. Fewer federal government workers. No offense to my government workers out there, but I sure wish there was a hell of a lot less of you. Federal government workers down by 97,000 since January of this year. And we also lost jobs in mining, quarrying, and gas extraction, down by 6,000. That's kind of interesting because those are fields that we're supposed to be expanding in. Anyway, you look at it, guys, this jobs numbers, it was bad. Now, initially, the market couldn't make up its mind what it wanted to do. Do we want to focus on this economic malaise, on the actual real state of the economy, on what people's lives are like? Are they shopping more? Are they shopping less? Are small businesses doing well? No, silly rabbit. We don't talk about that. The only thing Wall Street wants to hear about is, when is my easy money coming back? Where's my rate cuts? Where's my money printer? Zirp and burp, baby. That's where the big money is. And the market is actually celebrating this terrible news because it virtually guarantees now that the Federal Reserve will be cutting rates in September. The question is, will they be cutting by 25 or by 50? Either way, the easy money is coming back. And so the stock bros are pumping those numbers. The dollar is way down and everything is way up this morning. Bonds are up, sending yields lower. All three indexes in the green. Gold and silver higher. Bitcoin's higher. Everything is higher except the value of the dollar, except the value of your savings. Again, the market can see it. The easy money is coming back. And so everybody's just buying everything. Also going on this morning, Broadcom earnings. Well, there's a lot to unpack in those Broadcom earnings. It was a big beat. The stock is way up this morning. But the big takeaway, Broadcom got a $10 billion order for custom AI chips from a mystery customer. We all know who that mystery customer is, but we'll talk about that one as well. That's a lot of money that is now not going to be going to NVIDIA. I don't know that Broadcom is actually going to start like eating NVIDIA's lunch anymore, but keep in mind, guys, NVIDIA is priced for perfection. Not good news for them. We also got earnings from Lululemon. That stock is getting clobbered this morning on weak demand and tariffs. Apparel remains one of those sectors that is highly exposed to tariffs because all the clothes are made in Southeast Asia. Look, people are broke and they can't afford $120 yoga pants for the workout that they do probably once a month because we're an obese society. Lululemon stock has had a rough year. Got a lot rougher this morning on that news. Tariffs obviously taking a big chunk out of them. Tesla wants to pay Elon Musk $1 trillion. I kid you not, that's a real story. There's obviously a lot of detail there, and I think I know what's really going on here, and it's not really such a big bullish call on Tesla as much as it is just the guarantee that the government's going to destroy the value of the dollar, and Elon Musk very well may become the world's first trillionaire because of that. Who had that on their 2020s bingo? We've also got NVIDIA. Oh, I love this story. The story broke yesterday in the information. NVIDIA is spending $1.3 billion to rent their own chips for 4 years from Lambda, their soon-to-IPO new hyperscaler. They're for 4 years, they're going to rent $1.3 billion. This is a 10,000 of their chips that they're renting back. That is more money than they sold those chips for. So it's like you sell your house and then you rent it back from the people you sold it to over 4 years for more money than you sold the house to them. That makes no sense whatsoever. Actually, it makes perfect sense because NVIDIA is nothing but circular accounting, trying to artificially inflate demand for their products. Oh, and by the way, NVIDIA is a large shareholder in Lambda, so their stake in the company is going to go bigger when they IPO and they're inflating their revenue. NVIDIA is both the largest supplier and the largest customer for this company now. The round tripping is just getting obscene here. Are we even pretending that this isn't just one massive accounting fraud anymore? I don't even think the market is pretending. They're just like, oh, maybe the stock goes a little bit higher before this bubble bursts and wipes people out. And then we can all pretend like we didn't tell the whole world to ignore Jack and everything he's been warning about us since August of 2023. Speaking of things I've been warning about since 2023, CoreWeave insiders are dumping their stock at an obscenely fast rate. Seems like every day they are dumping shares. That's because every day they're dumping shares. Magnetar is doing it too. The company's CEO, chief technical officer, COO. They're all dumping. They're all getting out. And, you know, meanwhile, the AI bros are all scrambling to delete all their shit-talking tweets about my videos, warning that this very thing was going to happen. And, of course, we've got things going on in the Caribbean, guys. Things are getting worse. The Venezuelan Air Force buzzed one of our destroyers yesterday, and now we're sending more fighters to the Caribbean. So the prospect of war in our backyard is getting higher by the day. You know, they're saying it's about drugs. They're saying it's about the cartels. It's about oil. Let's face facts. Guys, we got a lot to talk about this morning. It's a jobs day. A lot of numbers, a lot of math. How about we shrink my big melon of a head and let's see what's going on in the market today. And as always, everybody, don't forget that like button. If you're new here, hit that subscribe button right next to it because we do this one every single day. So come on back tomorrow and have your coffee with the melon heads. Right now, the S&P 500 is higher by 26 points or 0.4% to the upside as people rush to dump their dollars before the Fed and the Treasury make them worthless. The Dow, meanwhile, is also higher by 40 points or 0.1%. Again, look at that candle that right on the announcement. You had stocks initially sold off a little bit on that jobs number, and then they rallied, and now they're continuing to rally. It's not about the health of the economy. It's about how soon the easy money gets back. And that means the NASDAQ, of course, leading the way higher, up by 214 points, 0.9% to the upside for the NASDAQ. Those Broadcom earnings are probably contributing to that as well. Meanwhile, dump your dollars, everybody. 97.6 on the DXY, down by 69 basis points, or 0.7% lower for the dollar. Again, this is all on prospects that the Federal Reserve cuts rates in September. Let's check in on the Federal Reserve, shall we? Let's refresh this and get an accurate mark. Right now, the market is now saying there is an 88% likelihood of a 25 basis point rate cut at the September meeting. Oh, and this just in, I'm getting this in my ear, which is ironic because I'm not even wearing an earpiece. Now a 12% likelihood of a 50 basis point rate cut or two rate cuts in September. That's news. This was 99% one cut, 1% no cut. Now it's 88% one cut, 12% no cut. I think as the day progresses, we're probably going to see that number, that likelihood of a 50 basis point cut, get a little bit bigger. Guys, at this point, even if CPI comes in higher than expected, I think the Fed still cuts here because the Fed has already signaled that they're willing to look through inflation because they think, you ready for this? They think it's going to be temporary. Gee, anyone having flashbacks here? Transitory, anyone? Any of you kids in the back? No? Okay. They're willing to look through a little temporary inflation because they think the tariffs is going to be a one-off price increase, which it very well may be. It's just the optics of that really sucks after transitory. And so even if we get a higher than expected CPI here for September, we're probably still looking at rate cuts. All right, let's check in at the bond market, and people are rushing for the safe haven of bonds. Honestly, it's not even a flight to safety, although when you look at yields falling double-digit basis points, you'd think it's a flight to safety, but how do you rectify that with the NASDAQ? This is a flight out of the dollar. Safety is anything but dollars here. That's what this is telling you. The 30-year yield is at 4.787, down by 8.5 basis points this morning. The 10-year, big move in the 10-year, down 11.5 points. 4.061% for the 10-year Treasury. The 2-year, meanwhile, also down 11.5 points, 3.476. And the 1-month, starting to price in the certainty of those rate cuts here, down 5 basis points at 4.206 for the 1-month. So people are buying bonds. And look at the commodities board. Wow. Metals are just loving this weaker dollar and these lower yields here. First things first, we've got spot gold is higher by $37.29, $3,582. That is up by 1%. And even the front month contract back above $3,600 here, $3,639 for that December gold future. Spot silver is back above $41 at $41.22. That's higher by 54 cents. Or 1.3%. I like the shiny. Copper, meanwhile, is higher by 0.8%. Platinum is up almost 2%. Palladium, kind of trailing here, up about 0.33%. And oil is heading lower here, down 2.25%. $62.04 for those October WTI futures. That's down by $1.43. Everything is up except for oil. Why? Because the economy is in the doghouse. People aren't working, and that means people aren't driving to work. People aren't producing things at work. That means less energy consumed. Price of oil goes lower, not to mention prospects for more oil production from OPEC, which has been in the rumor mill pretty much all week. Bitcoin is also getting in on the buying this morning as people dump their dollars and buy anything and everything they can except oil. We've got Bitcoin is just under 113,000 here this morning, $112,927 as shown on Coinbase. That's higher by about $2,200. Bitcoin is trying to break out of this little bit of a sell-off that we've had since the whales dumped in the middle of August. Still below that 50-day moving average of 115,000 though. All right, let's talk about the non-farm payrolls. Now, first, I got to refresh this chart because the charts, they don't always reflect the downward revisions, and this one still is not reflecting the downward revisions. There's your August number, 22,000 jobs added. That little bitty blip right there, that's all we got. Now, even these prior months, it did seem they updated the June number to show the 79,000 jobs added. That's the upward revision of 6,000. But they still haven't updated June. This should reflect negative 13,000. So we should have this number be one of them little orange ones below the X-axis there. So the chart still hasn't quite updated. But even still, you can see here, guys, job creation is virtually non-existent in this economy. That is the takeaway here. Not good. Not a good look. We also had the unemployment rate ticked up by 0.1% to 4.3%. That is up from 4.2% in July and 4.1% in June. So we are starting to see the unemployment rate rise. Now, the other thing, let's zoom out to a three-year chart. And you can kind of see here, guys, unemployment bottomed out pretty much at the end of 2022, right when this silly AI bubble started. And the economy has been deteriorating ever since. Unemployment has been slowly but steadily grinding higher the whole time this silly bubble has been inflating. And everybody's been like, oh, it's the best economy ever because people are burning money on data centers that are never going to turn a profit. Meanwhile, Main Street is out of work. And it looks even worse when you look at the U6 unemployment rate. Now, U6 is a more all-encompassing number because it counts people who are, what they say, marginally attached to the labor market. This is people who are working part-time because they can't find full-time work, or people who are working BS jobs that barely pay. They're basically unemployed with very little money coming in. That is up to 8.1%, up from 7.9%. So that took an uptick of 0.2 basis points this month. That just goes to show you, not only do we have rising unemployment, but we also have rising underemployment. We'll see that in just a second in some of the full-time and part-time jobs. And again, guys, you can see how the U6, it bottomed in December of 2022, just after ChatGPT's release. And look, unemployment has been rising the whole time. Now, unemployment has nothing to do with ChatGPT. The whole point is this AI bubble has masked the economic reality on Main Street. This whole time I've been saying, hey guys, the job market, it stinks. People don't have any money. They're not making anything. They're having to drive Uber and do OnlyFans on the side to try to make ends meet. This is not a good economy. People are finally starting to admit that. And last but not least, labor force participation rate did tick up a little bit to 62.3. That's up from 62.2. That is a slightly good sign. On a three-year chart, though, you can see labor force participation has also been trending down for the better part of about a year and a half now. All right, now one thing I like to always look at when we go through these jobs numbers is what kind of jobs are we getting? Now, keep in mind, guys, there's two different surveys in this jobs report. You've got the establishment survey. That's what gives you the headline number, the number of jobs added. That's polling businesses, how many people did you hire or fire? That's the establishment survey. But you also get the household survey, which calls up people and says, are you working? And if you are, what kind of work are you doing? Now, those two numbers tend to vary wildly for some reason because the statistics are flawed. But it does give us some insight into what's going on in the economy. And one of the things I always like to look at is full-time workers. We've got 134,480,000 full-time workers in the U.S. These numbers are in thousands shown here. That is down from 134,837,000 in the prior month. By the way, these are seasonally adjusted numbers. Let's overlook that little asterisk. But we've got a loss of 357,000 full-time jobs. And as always, guys, full-time jobs, they tend to be higher paying. They tend to have benefits like healthcare. They tend to come with retirement plans, paid time off. All right. These are the good jobs. These are the jobs you want. And they are vanishing by the millions in this economy. And they're being replaced with BS part-time jobs and gig work. Case in point, you can see it in these numbers just below. This is part-time workers in the United States, 29,034,000. That is up from 28,437,000. That is a gain of 597,000 part-time jobs. That offsets your loss of full-time jobs. But you've also got multiple job holders, people who are working two jobs to make ends meet. That number is up big as well, 8.785 million, up from 8.342 million. You got another 443,000 people are working two jobs than they were a month ago. So, yeah, we lost 357,000 part-time jobs. We replaced it with twice as many we lost 357,000 full-time jobs, replaced it with twice as many part-time jobs, which probably combined pay less money than the full-time job did. And last but not least, self-employed, unincorporated. This is where your gig workers, your Ubers, your DoorDashers, your OnlyFans, and part-time like day laborers, they show up in here as well. That number is higher. sharply higher, 9.9 million versus 9.6, a gain of 304,000 self-employed unincorporated. So guys, we're gaining jobs in all the categories that don't pay dirt, and we're losing the big ones, the full-time jobs, the stability that comes with it. This economy, this job market, it just, scientifically speaking, it sucks. That's the only way I could put that. All right, let's shift gears a little bit here to some of the earnings that we got. Broadcom, that's the big story here. This is contributing to the rally in the NASDAQ this morning. Broadcom stock rises on new AI chip customer order after earnings beat. Broadcom stock surged after the company announced on its earnings call that it has won an order from a new customer. Who could it be, though? Stand by for that. For its fiscal third quarter, the company reported revenue of $15.95 billion. That is beating estimates of $15.8 billion, according to FactSet. Adjusted earnings came in $1.69 a share, which is above analyst consensus estimate of $1.66 a share. Guidance was solid for the current quarter. Broadcom guided to $17.4 billion in revenue. That's compared to analyst expectations of $17 billion. All right, so it was a really good quarter. Let's overlook things like free cash flow wasn't really there, rising in accounts receivable, things we see all across this AI bubble. That being said, pretty good headline numbers here from Broadcom. But this is one that you want to pay attention to. On the earnings call, CEO Hock Tan announced that Broadcom had secured a $10 billion in AI orders from a new qualified customer, which he believes will significantly improve the AI revenue outlook for fiscal 2026. All right, so somebody is buying $10 billion of AI chips from Broadcom. They're not buying them from NVIDIA. That's a big takeaway here. Who could it be? Who is this mystery man? Well, we all know who it is because they've already told us. It's OpenAI. OpenAI to launch its first AI chip in 2026 with Broadcom, the Financial Times reports. This one just hit today. Yesterday afternoon. OpenAI is set to produce its first AI chip next year in partnership with U.S. semiconductor giant Broadcom, the Financial Times reported on Thursday, citing people familiar with the matter. OpenAI plans to put the chip to use internally rather than make it available to external customers, the Financial Times reported. Broadcom CEO Hock Tan said on Thursday that the company expects AI revenue growth for fiscal 2026 to improve significantly after securing more than $10 billion in AI infrastructure orders from a new customer without naming it. For whatever reason, we play coy on the earnings calls. We don't name our customers, even though we all know who it is. Broadcom stock, though, ripping on this news, up almost 15% ahead of the opening bell, $352, higher by about $45 this morning. Guys, this is a big company. I mean, you got a $1.4 trillion market cap, and it's up by 15%. So a few hundred billion dollars worth of market cap just materializing out of thin air off of this earnings call. So as always, guys, the hardware manufacturers, they are the only ones who are making money in this bubble. And you can add Broadcom to that list. Meanwhile, Lululemon stock is just getting absolutely crushed here. Slides as weak U.S. demand and tariffs cost. Let's do this again because I butchered that title. Lululemon slides as weak U.S. demand and tariff costs cloud holiday outlook. I hate when my holiday outlook gets clouded. Lululemon Athletica shares slumped 19% before the bell, after the yoga wear retailer signaled a tepid holiday season, citing lackluster demand and steep tariff costs. And I tell you, those 357,000 people who lost their full-time jobs last month, I doubt they'll be buying Lulu yoga pants for Christmas, not when they cost $120 and they're barely able to keep the lights on. The company, which was hopeful until recently that its weekly launches would boost holiday demand, slashed its 2025 sales and profit forecasts on Thursday. Executives said sales fatigue in its scuba and dance studio pants, popular among its loyal high-value shoppers, has prompted a push to speed up innovation and reduce dependence on bestsellers. Can somebody tell me what the hell are scuba pants? I'm assuming these people are not like aquatic adventurers, that they're just calling them scuba pants. I don't know. I'm a little out of touch. I don't get out much. Forgive me. But scuba pants, that's news to me. But I digress. Second quarter comparable sales for Lululemon's America segment, its largest, fell by 1%, while international sales rose by 15%. The company expects a hit of $240 million this year from higher tariffs on Vietnam and China and the end of the de minimis exemption that previously let Lululemon ship items valued under 800% duty free. That's taking a chunk out of their e-commerce business. The company expects annual profit per share between $12.77 and $12.97. That's down from $14.58 to $14.78 earlier. So tariffs and declines in demand taking a big chunk out of Lulu this morning. Look at that stock. Let's refresh and get an accurate mark here. The opening bell just rang down almost 20%, trading at $165 here, off by 40 bucks this morning. And take a look at this one, guys, year to date. Let's let the chart update. Now down 56.8% year to date. It has been a rough year for the expensive apparel makers, the struggling consumer, the tariffs, just absolutely clobbering this company. Meanwhile, here's one everybody's talking about, and I'm sure Senator Karen from Massachusetts is just going to love this story. Tesla offers unprecedented $1 trillion pay package to Elon Musk. Wow. There's some details here that kind of takes the thunder away from this, though. Tesla proposed a new compensation agreement for Chief Executive Officer Elon Musk, potentially worth around $1 trillion, a massive package without precedent in corporate America. The long-awaited proposal, designed to incentivize Musk to lead Tesla for years to come, sets a series of ambitious benchmarks that he must meet to earn the full payout, including expanding Tesla's nascent robotaxi business and growing the company's market value to at least $8.5 trillion from around $1 trillion today. The plan spans 10 years. All right, so that last part there, that's pretty big, all right? He's got to hit a market cap of $8.5 trillion within 10 years in order to trigger this massive payout, which is probably going to be mostly stock. The company right now is worth $1 trillion. So they are betting on an 850% increase in the share price in order to trigger this $1 trillion pay package. Is this really about the prospects of Tesla's business? And is there, the robotaxi is going to take over everything. We're all going to ride a Johnny cab around Mars. Or is this just the admission that the dollar is becoming worthless and the value of this company is probably going to 10X in the next 10 years, not because of an expanding business, but because of an ever depreciating dollar? That's up to you to decide. Honestly, I mean, Elon had his $50 billion pay package was stripped to him by a Delaware court, and so Tesla left Delaware and went to Texas. Honestly, I think this is a silly headline. We're talking so far in advance. If Elon hits this threshold, it's probably going to be because they turned on the money printers again, not because we're all driving robotaxis and we all have Optimus washing our dishes for us in the kitchen. All right, I just love this story also. NVIDIA inks a $1.5 billion deal with Lambda to rent chips, the information reports. An accurate way to say this would be NVIDIA sells chips to Lambda and then signs a four-year agreement to rent them back for even more money than they were paid for those chips in order to artificially inflate their earnings and the revenue of Lambda, who is about to IPO. Round and round, the money goes in circles, guys. We're all getting dizzy here, but here is another example. NVIDIA reached an agreement this summer to rent 10,000 of its artificial intelligence chips from cloud provider Lambda for $1.3 billion over 4 years. That is way more than they're even selling those chips for. It's like the Mary Kay lady who buys all of her own stuff so she can earn more commissions. Okay, but you're sending them more money than they're sending you. But this is all about inflating revenue numbers. They also signed a separate $200 million deal to rent 8,000 more chips over an unspecified time frame. The information report, citing a person with direct knowledge of the deals, NVIDIA is now Lambda's biggest customer, ahead of the company's initial public offering, according to the website, which adds that Lambda's business and concentrated customer base resembles CoreWeave. And why wouldn't they do it with Lambda? They did it with CoreWeave and they got away with it because the financial press circled the wagons around this company to protect the bubble. And so it was massively successful. CoreWeave stock, they IPO'd. The stock went up ridiculously high. They sold billions of dollars worth of chips. Jensen got rich. The CoreWeave executives got rich. Everybody is exit liquidity for these guys. Why not do it again? NVIDIA is now both the biggest supplier and the biggest customer of those chips. It's just their own money, guys. By the way, NVIDIA is also a big shareholder in Lambda. So when NVIDIA signs this deal, to rent $1.3 billion over 4 years, Lambda's going to go ahead and report that as revenue, and everybody's going to bid up Lambda stock because, oh my God, the revenue growth is so amazing. Well, that bid up Lambda stock is going to make NVIDIA even more money because NVIDIA owns the stock. At the end of the day, there's no real demand for this stuff. It's just artificially created. It's just one big round-tripping scheme. But hey, I've been beating that drum for years. We've all heard it here. Something else we've heard here is a lot about this company, CoreWeave. Pay attention, guys. CoreWeave insiders, they are up and cashing out. And big time. CoreWeave stock sinks 10% as key shareholder dumps close to $100 million worth of shares. Guys, this article is 2 days old, and it's already obsolete because just yesterday there were four more Form 4s filed with the SEC for CoreWeave insiders dumping. These guys are dumping shares like crazy. It's the great cash out. Big insiders continue to offload their shares after the post-IPO lockup expired about 2 weeks ago. CoreWeave stock got slammed on Tuesday, sliding nearly 10% as big money insiders and top executives continued unloading their positions. The post-IPO lockup expired 2 days after the company's mid-August earnings release, and insiders wasted no time. Magnetar Financial, one of the company's largest shareholders, has now dumped a total of 2.4 million shares in August alone. Last Thursday, Magnetar and its subsidiaries and other affiliated insiders sold 915,339 shares worth another $94.4 million. That's on top of the 1.5 million shares they offloaded earlier this month. Insiders are joining in on the spree. CEO Michael and Trader joined the selling spree, unloading 82,455 shares last Wednesday. That's about $7.8 million. Their general counsel, Kristen McVitie, she went even bigger, cashing out her entire stake in the company of 311,796 shares for about $30 million. By the way, we've also had the co-founders, Brian Venturo, Brandon McBee. They're all cashing out, as well as all of their holding companies and the trusts that they have set up in their names. Look at this here, right here. This is CoreWeave's website. Just yesterday, there were four of these were filed for company executives selling shares. There was another one was filed on the 3rd. There was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 filed on the 2nd. There's two more on the 2nd of September, reported proposed sale of securities. On the 29th, they were dumping. Every freaking business day, guys, there are multiple disclosures of either Magnetar or CoreWeave insiders dumping stock. Congratulations, guys. If you bought this stock at $150, you are exit liquidity for dirtbags that I tried to warn you about. Stock is down to about $89. It's about 50% off of its high. Still double what it IPO'd at. It's up about 1.8% ahead of the opening bell this morning, $89.08. How many CoreWeave executives will sell stock today? Only time will tell. Keep an eye on my Twitter feed and I'll let you know. Also, some quick ones to keep an eye on, guys. Yesterday, Venezuelan military aircraft fly near U.S. warship in provocative move, the Pentagon says. Keep an eye on this story, guys. Yesterday, two Venezuelan F-16s flew over a U.S. Arleigh Burke-class destroyer. And that's interesting because F-16s, don't we make F-16s? Yes, we do. We sold them to Venezuela way back in the early 1980s, back when they were our friends. I'm actually pretty amazed that the Venezuelans are even able to get these things airborne at this point. They're very much outdated models of the F-16, but they flew right over one of our boats. Look, history does not look kindly on people who mess with the boats when it comes to America. All right. There's any number of examples of what happens when you mess with America's boats. Don't do it. I highly don't recommend it. But hey, it's also worth pointing out, we messed with one of their boats. We blew up a cartel boat with 11 people on it a few days ago, and now they're flying their F-16s over one of our destroyers. Shouldn't be too surprising. And of course, the ink wasn't even dry on this article, and then we got this other one that we're sending 10 fighter jets to Puerto Rico. That would be F-35s, almost certainly to counter the threat of Venezuelan aircraft. 1980s F-16s against modern F-35s. You really don't want to find, if you're a Venezuelan pilot, you really don't want to find out how that one ends. Just keep an eye on this, guys. It's right in our backyards. I mentioned this earlier this week. They discovered oil off the coast of Guyana. Venezuela claims that oil is theirs. They're threatening to take it by force. All of a sudden, the U.S. Navy is there. We're blowing up drug boats. This is escalating pretty quick there. I just want to say thank you very much to T.A. Chapman. What's going on, T.A.? Thank you, sir, for being a Melonhead member for 14 months. He says, boom goes the dynamite. Was that in probably in regards to the non-farm payrolls number? Yeah. You know, look, guys, stock markets and asset prices at all-time highs. At the end of the day, if people aren't working, they're not collecting paychecks. If they're not collecting paychecks, they're not making rent. They're not making utility payments. They're certainly not paying to use the paid version of ChatGPT, further inflating OpenAI and NVIDIA's earnings. At the end of the day, without a solid middle class driving consumption in this country, this economy is doomed. And the middle class has been obliterated since 1971 when they took us off the gold standard. Better fix that problem. I don't know. They're not going to put us back on the gold standard. That's not going to happen without absolute catastrophe. But they need to somehow fix the way they have bled the middle class dry. If they don't, their own earnings are going to start going away. And, you know, you can play financial games like they're doing with private credit and private equity and creating continuation vehicles and secondary offerings. You can buy yourself times with all that bullshit, but you can't fix the problem. At the end of the day, that loss has to go somewhere. Oh, that's right. It's going to our 401ks and our pensions. Oh, I'm not helping, am I? Yep. Boom goes the dynamite. You're right, T.A. Chapman. Thank you, sir, for supporting the channel. Hey, and thank you again for gifting 20 Nobody Special Finance memberships. Appreciate the support of the channel, sir. And welcome to you 20 new Melonheads. Hey, just a reminder, guys, that when you are a YouTube member, you get one free super chat a month. Feel free to use that, and I will read and respond to your questions live on the air. Thanks again, T.A. T.A. again, thank you a third time. He says, happy Friday, Jack. Have a great weekend. Have you considered doing an interview with Mitch Vexler about housing? Maybe Mitch and Travis and Melody. Oh, a Doomer plus one reunion video. That's not a bad idea. I still talk with Travis and Melody all the time. Mitch has done pretty incredible work with what he's doing, taking on the property taxes in Texas specifically. But his lawsuit, I believe, is spreading to other states. Mitch Vexler is basically saying that the county assessors in Texas are conspiring with municipal governments and school boards to just artificially inflate property tax revenues by increasing valuations of homes based on numbers fed to them by the school districts. In other words, the school district says, I want an extra $2 million to build a great big football stadium for my school district that has 2,000 kids. Okay, go find the money. And then all of a sudden, the county appraisal districts are raising the valuations of homes, thus increasing property taxes for those people. And, you know, if you're a town that's got a lot of senior citizens on fixed income, they can't just absorb that hit. Mitch has done incredible work there. I have been following that story. It's not a bad idea to have him on the channel. Thank you, TA, for supporting the channel. Shout out to my friends Melody Wright and Travis from Real Estate Mindset. Check out those channels. Highly recommend both. Hunt and Cover, what's going on, brother? Good to see you. He says, hi, Jack. Good day to you and all Melons. Thank you so much, Hunt, for the good vibes this morning. A good day to you, sir. And thank you for being a Melonhead for 18 months, a seasoned veteran of the Melonheads. I'm losing my place here. Where am I? Ken, is it Butcher or Boucher? Boucher. Ken B. Thank you, Ken. I apologize for butchering your name. He says, yo, Nobody Special. What's your silver price target to end the year? All right, to end the year, I'm gonna delete the end of the year thing. I don't really like the time frame, and I'm not messing around with options right now, so it's not as important to me. Let me just say, silver's got a date with 50. All right, and the reason why silver's got a date with 50, zoom way TF out on that channel, and you've got that ultimate cup and handle pattern going all the way back to the Hunt brothers in 1980s. Silver went to 50 bucks, sold off. Went there again in 2011, sold off, and now honestly, like from a technical perspective, there is nowhere to stop between here and 50. I think we're probably going to move, we're probably going to touch 50 in pretty short order here. Do we break through or do we reject that level and go back into the 30s? That's the question. But honestly, that's the number. I get a twinkle in my eye when I think about that 50 number. I do think we're probably going there. Do we break through it? Big question. I don't know. We're not going to blow right through it. I'd be really surprised. You just don't hit a 40-year resistance line without some kind of stall or some kind of bounce. So we're probably going to go touch 50, reject that level, probably fail a few times to break through it. And if we do break through it, well, then have fun and use your imagination where we go from there. Thank you very much, Ken. Appreciate the super chat, sir. Uncle Fedster says, happy Friday, Jack. Hey, Melonheads, let's like and subscribe so we get Jack to 100,000 subs. Don't threaten me with a good time. I would love to replace the banana with a silver plaque. Got to get to that 100K number. We're kind of stalled in the 60s here. So, yeah, hey, feel free to tell 40,000 of your closest friends and family all about my channel. Thank you very much, Uncle Fester. Appreciate the good vibes and the algo bump. Madison Hype says, do you like buying long calls and puts? Thanks for the show. Be careful on leverage. That's all I can say. Guys, right now, this market, you have more people are trading on margin than any time in history. That means the market is way, way over leveraged. And when you get over leveraged, eventually there is a deleveraging. And you do not want to be on leverage when the deleveraging happens. All right. So all I can tell you guys is there are big gains to be had trading in options, but you can get wiped out in the blink of an eye. All right. And look, you know, you could be short the market. You could be making all this money. You could call, this company went bankrupt and I called it and I was making money on short. And then the Fed prints $6 trillion and wipes out your gains in an instant. So not only do you need to be right about what, you need to be right about when. All right. So be very careful. I do trade on options every now and then, not nearly as much as I used to. I just don't trust price discovery in this market. And since there is no price discovery, I'm not willing to make levered bets on where those prices are going to go and when, because it's not up to me. It's not up to math. It's not up to the laws of economics. It's up to a bureaucrat with a money printer that I can't predict. Thank you very much, Madison, for supporting the channel. Nashville Pasta Man, what's going on, brother? He says, Venezuelan pilots all be watching Maverick. I don't think they're watching Maverick. I think the Venezuelan pilots are watching the old school Top Gun, because the planes they're flying in were built before that movie was made. So maybe they're watching Maverick to try to figure out how to fight a fifth generation fighter in a 1980s shitbox. Let's hope it doesn't come to that. All right. At the end of the day, they're just guys trying to make a living, those pilots. I hate to see people killing each other because stupid bureaucrats can't get along. Let's hope for the best. All right. Prepare for the worst. Hope for the best. Thank you, Pasta Man. Appreciate the super chat, sir. Tom Dillon, thank you, sir, for the generosity. He says, if you want to end the Fed, you delegitimize it. It's already there for conservatives. Oh, okay. I see where we're going with this. We're going to go ahead and don the tinfoil. Maybe. I've heard this before. I don't personally subscribe to this chain of thought, but it is increasingly there is some element of truth to this. Possibly the reason why Trump is going after Lisa Cook and Fed independence is because he wants to end the Fed. He's trying to delegitimize it. All right. Trump's move toward board members undercuts liberal faith in it. The result, the Fed is kaput. Machiavelli would be proud of Donnie T. Again, I'm not sure that's what he's doing. Personally, I don't think that's what he's doing. I would freaking love it if that's what he was doing, if the ultimate goal was to get rid of the Federal Reserve. But at the end of the day, President Trump looks at the stock market like his report card, which means he wants easy money to inflate stock valuations. And if you're trying to end the Fed, that's not how you get higher stock valuations. The simplest explanation here, without the tinfoil hat, is that he just wants to push that stock bubble further out, just inflate it more. If you go a few more layers deep, you could eventually arrive at this. Maybe he's trying to destroy the Fed and doing all that. Maybe he wants to put us back on the gold standard. The guy, I mean, he likes to poop on a gold standard, right? He's got his solid gold toilet in his bathroom. So maybe that's where he's going with this. Don't threaten me with a good time. Let's just put it that way. Thank you, Tom Dillon. Appreciate the super chat and the support of the chat. Hey, here's another one from Tom Dillon. Thank you. He says 10 more because YouTube taxes super chats like liberal congressmen tax the middle class. I heard creators were going to be exempted from the tax on tips. I don't know, though, because YouTube doesn't separate those with the paperwork that they send out. YouTube would have to change their financial reporting if they were going to do that. And otherwise, it's just a headache for me. But hey, I won't turn down easy money. Thank you very much, Tom. I appreciate the super chat and the support of the channel. And yes, YouTube, they always take their cut as well. Hey, it's their platform, it's their rules. What can I say? Thanks again, Tom. And thank you, everybody, for having your coffee with the Melon Heads. Hey, thank you guys so much for all the super chats and the support of the channel, as well as you magnanimous Melon Heads on Patreon and YouTube. Thank you guys for everything you do for the channel. Looking forward to talking to you guys at 2 p.m. Eastern time for our weekly get-together on Zoom. Links down below in the description should you feel so inclined. Don't forget that like button and that subscribe button for the algorithm on the way out. Hi, Mom. Hi, Dad. Love you guys. Everybody, till next time, live small and dream big.